We live on the rim. They live down here. Neither gets too interested in the other. You get my drift?
Doesn't help us much at the moment, though.
Can't have everything. We got much farther to go?
Another half hour, maybe. Should get us there before sunfall.
Then let's get going.
Ryan wondered if Mac had realized that the balance of power had shifted within the group, and that Ryan's people now held the upper hand in terms of numbers and blasters. He noted that JB had retrieved Todd's giant blaster and was carrying it across his shoulder with some effort, his pocket stuffed with the homemade cartridges. If Mac had noticed, he remained silent. He hadn't even mentioned Jack's knives. The pot-bellied valley dweller led the way, carrying his blaster over his shoulder. It seemed to Ryan that he'd made a decision without even bothering to put it into words.
Let's go, people.
Doc's fragile mind was still reeling from shock as Murphy prodded him in the small of the back with his blue 9mm Beretta, reclaimed from where it had been left in the armory. It was good to have the blaster back, and it gave Murphy a sense of confidence in handling the old man.
Come on, old fart. Out of here. You've got to be prepared.
Treat him with some respect. He's going to be part of the mechanism. Besides, regs say that a POW should be treated according to convention.
Murphy looked blankly at Wallace for a moment. Then it clicked that the gen was referring to a prisoner of war. He tried to hide the contempt in his eyes for the gen. He had always believed that Wallace read the regs too literally. Doc dragged himself back into what he laughingly thought of as reality, prompted by the pain in his back where the Beretta's muzzle was digging into him. He assessed the exchange of hostile glances, put it together with what Ryan had said to them earlier about his feelings regarding Wallace and Murphy, and shrewdly played the lunatic while he waited for a chance to drive a larger stake between the two men.
This pathetic old man? Treat him with respect? He wouldn't know if you were or not. He's mad.
You wouldn't be completely sane if you'd been through all the doctor has been through. I guess a little insanity is excusable. Besides, and strictly off the record, are we sure about the mental stability of each component in the mechanism?
I don't know.
Exactly. It's their unity that gives them strength. The good doctor will actually benefit from being joined to the mechanism. It will help him regain his equilibrium.
Let's just get him prepared, then. Come on, sir.
They left Wallace looking at the Rat King. Two techs in vacuum suits had entered the chamber through a decontamination anteroom and were busy unplugging the dead component from the mechanism. Doc cast a sideways glance as he and Murphy left the observation room. The sight stayed with him as they walked down the corridor. The component being removed wore a military uniform denoting high rank in the Marines. Like the others, he was glassy-eyed, with skin stretched tight across his ancient skull, clothes flapping loose on his limbs. The only thing to differentiate him from the others attached to the mainframe was that the vital signs on his monitors had ceased to register. Just by looking at the once-human frames, there was no way of telling which of the bodies attached to the mechanism were alive and which were dead. As they left the room, Doc had caught a glimpse of one of the vacuum-suited techs beginning to unplug the diodes and leads from the one-time Marine officer's skull, pulling the ends from the cerebral cortex and frontal lobes, small pieces of decaying gray matter attached to their ends.
What's so funny, you old bastard?
Nothing that would amuse you, my dear boy. Do you really think that Wallace's plan will work?
Hell, we all follow regs, that's all.
Is it really all? Do you not sometimes question a rule book that's over 100 years out of date? Written for other times than these?
Maybe you aren't such a crazy old fart after all. You figure that me and the gen don't exactly see eye to eye on some things?
That's a distinct possibility.
Murphy led Doc into a lab and gestured to him to sit on one of the chairs in the center of the room. He seemed to relax, but still kept the Beretta trained on Doc.
I guess there'd be no harm in me telling you as you'll be chilled soon enough.
What?
Oh, yeah. Don't think that this bunch of inbreds and muties is going to be able to wire you up to that thing.
Dear.
Personally, I think the Gen is barking mad. Not his fault, not after all this time. But we're getting nowhere stuck down here trying to keep all this old tech going. The idea that the Reds will be back. Shit that died with Skydark.
Then why don't you take over?
Well, there is a cabal of us who want to change things, get rid of the heredity shit and try promotion on merit.
I see.
You do, do you? See, the main problem we face is that we've got limited resources down here, in real terms, that is. We've got jack shit in the way of fresh blood, and although blasters are up to par, we're getting low on Plazex and Grens. We need to trade more, but that's not in the regs. Instead, we waste time with old projects that go nowhere, like the Rat King, or all the old tech that stops and starts and can't be used against the outsiders. They're the enemy now, not the Reds. Anyway, R&D ain't that anymore. They're just a bunch of cretins, retards, and muties who can barely keep the old shit in working order, let alone make something new.
Very fine words, Sarge. Now are you going to repeat them in front of the Gen? Or aren't you quite brave enough for that yet?
Dr. Trick stood in the doorway, arching one of her perfect eyebrows in a way that made Doc go weak at the pit of his stomach. Truly, she was beautiful.
Don't do that to a man.
Trix walked into the room and put her arms around Murphy's neck. She kissed him delicately on the cheek.
What's the matter? Think I'm going to tell the Gen all about your little plan?
I know you wouldn't.
Why's that?
Because you want me, and you'll only be allowed when the regs are gone. Then it won't matter if you're not good breeding stock.
Not like that pig Panner.
Huh.
Why are you telling the old man all this anyway?
What does it matter? He'll soon be chilled.
But I thought I was to prepare him for the Mobius.
Yeah, but he won't survive, will he? I mean, you aren't going to be able to cut open his brain, are you? Not like the others.
Not like that. But the Gen doesn't want it like that. No matter what you think about Wallace, he's not entirely stupid. He's well aware that we just don't have the expertise to open up the skull, to trepan like the others and direct-inject the brain. That was lost a long time ago. I could do it, but there isn't anyone else around here that I'd trust to assist on the operation. You know how I feel about the techs I have to deal with. They're morons who can't be trusted. But Wallace is determined that I link up Tanner to the Mobius, and he wants me to work out a way of connecting the old man without cutting into his skull. He won't die.
For that, madam, I am in your eternal debt.
I don't think you'll be saying that when you enter the mainframe and become something other than what you are.
You talk in conundrums, dear lady.
I can't tell you exactly, because I've never experienced it, obviously. All I know is that Mobius takes the intellectual capacity of its components and fuses them into one intelligence. So you become something other than yourself, as the others bleed into you.
I am not sure that I like the sound of that.
Dr. Tanner, you don't have the choice. Strap him in the chair, Sarge Murphy, then leave us alone.
Murphy strapped the unresisting Doc into the chair, handing his Beretta to Trix so that she could cover them. For his part, Doc reasoned that there was no chance of escape at this time, and so allowed Murphy to manhandle him.
I'm not sure I like this, Trix.
Murphy stepped back from the secured dock and once again took charge of his Beretta.
Wallace won't like it either.
The Gen has given me a free hand here. I've had to work out this damn procedure for myself, and I can't trust any of the inbreds or muties I have to work with to assist and get it right. I've got my ovaries on the line here. Until we get the chance to change things, I have to go along with the Gen, okay? This is going to be hard, and I don't need any distractions.
Trix picked up a hypodermic from a tray on her workbench and flicked the end before squirting a thin stream of liquid into the air to knock out any air bubbles.
Get going, Sarge. Tanner can't give me any problems now, and I need to concentrate.
Okay. I'll be outside. Wallace will expect that, at least.
The automatic door slid shut behind him with a rusting squeal, making Trix wince.
I wish the maintenance techs would sort that door out. Now then, I can't promise this won't be unpleasant, but at least I won't be opening up your brain.
Dr. Trix rolled up the sleeve of Doc's frock coat and the shirt underneath before spearing him in the vein that ran down the joint of his elbow.
Ouch!
She depressed the plunger on the hypodermic, and Doc felt a warmth spread through his veins, a velvet softness that hit almost immediately. During his time in the white coat hell that was the headquarters of Operation Kronos, Doc had experienced almost every kind of sedative and painkiller that had ever been formulated. This felt like the purest heroin, perhaps pure enough to kill him with one hit.
My three Kennedys. A nightmare of morphia bliss and sullen joy. Alice, where is the Mad Hatter now? The Cheshire Cat grins at me from beyond the boundaries of space and time. Yet he wears a white coat, my dear. Why is that? And why do you look at me so? For you are beautiful, and I have loved you truly, more truly than the spoken word can tell.
Doc's hand reached for Trix's arm, fingers clawing at the air. She could see the anguished terror of the man as he tried to keep a hold on what he believed to be reality, while the images of his subconscious ramblings ran riot across his mind. With a mew of distaste, she removed his hand from her arm and let it fall to his side, still clawing in involuntary spasms.
You poor bastard.
She stroked Doc's sweating brow.
This is a complete waste of time, but at least I won't kill you. I promise that. You alone know what it'll be like for you when you get into Mobius, but at least you'll still be alive. After a fashion.
Somewhere beneath his fevered ramblings, Doc was aware of what she was saying to him, and realized that there was no escape from being linked into the Rat King. But he wouldn't have his skull trepanned, and he wouldn't have electrodes and diodes placed in the soft gray tissue of his brain. Through a fog of feverish rambling, babbling softly to himself all the while, Doc was able to follow Trix's movements. Her soft fingers probed across his skull, parting the leonine mane of long white hair to find areas of the scalp that she marked with a stubby, indelible pencil, licking the end and murmuring to herself as she found the spots she was seeking. She turned away, and Doc could hear her moving instruments on her workbench.
Damn it, where are they? Oh, here we go.
Doc could suddenly hear the buzz of electric clippers before he saw them in her hand. Dr. Trix shaved away small portions of his hair, making perfect circles of pink, exposed scalp around the small, purple, indelible crosses. She switched off the clippers and headed back to the bench, returning to Doc with a series of rubber-tipped electrodes, small pads attached to the ends.
This won't hurt, Dr. Tanner.
She began to attach the electrodes methodically to the exposed areas of scalp.
I've been reading up on you from the material salvaged from the computer files. You really are a most remarkable man. It's interesting how your body seems to have taken the immense physical strain. I wouldn't have thought it would have manifested in such a fashion. Still, you never stop learning, eh? There, that's done. There's no way I'm going to open you up. But this should secure you to the mainframe.
Why? The others not like this?
Dr. Trix put a hand on her hip and struck a pose that would have had a younger, less befuddled Doc Tanner thinking of his beloved Emily. Trix's large, liquid brown eyes stared at him with an intensity that made him feel as if he wanted to melt into them.
It's quite simple. The original Mobius was made to last longer than it has, really. With the correct maintenance, it could still be going strong. Skydark changed all that. I'd guess the components were, shall we say, coerced into taking part. The removal of part of the skull and the direct inject was to make sure there was no going back. Seems to me that it wasn't strictly necessary from a scientific point of view. You, on the other hand, are another matter entirely. I can't risk chilling you, not with Wallace breathing down my neck. I have to keep you alive, at least until Murphy gets his act together, and we can dismantle the useless projects and utilize our resources properly. So you get the soft option, of sorts.
Doc closed his eyes and took a deep breath. He heard her turn and leave the room. There was a mumbling of voices, too distant through the drug to be coherent. With his eyes still closed, Doc heard footsteps into the room, the heavy clatter of combat boots. For one delirious moment, he hoped it may be Ryan and John Barrymore, leading an attempt to free him.
Let's get the show on the road!
No, only Murphy. The chair was unbolted from the floor, slipped onto a frame that jarred him, and he was wheeled out of the lab. Doc opened his eyes to see the strip lighting of the corridor ceiling slowly flash by above his head. He tried to look around, but his head felt too heavy and stuffed with cotton wool to respond. He was wheeled into an anteroom and left there. It could have been a few seconds, or it could have been a few years. Time was elastic and without meaning. Finally, men in biohazard suits entered the anteroom and sprayed him with what he took to be some kind of antiseptic. That done, they wheeled him into the main chamber. Doc was positioned where the now-departed Marine officer had spent the past century. He felt sharp pains in his hands and arms as the feeding tubes were inserted, felt the pressure as the liquid started to drip into his bloodstream. Was it imagination, or could he already feel his muscles start to atrophy? The tech finished attaching him to the apparatus that would keep him alive and prisoner in this room. Now came the moment he'd been dreading. They took the cables attached to his head and inserted jacks into the mainframe computer. A series of codes was punched in. Doc felt a tingling sensation begin at the back of his brain and braced himself. Suddenly, he was no longer in the room. A rush, a blinding light, and an immense jolt of pain that ran through his entire frame, making him convulse in spasms that passed slowly. The lights began to settle into shapes. The oppressive silence melted into white noise that resolved into pulses of static that eventually shaped into words.
Welcome to the torture machine, Dr. Tanner. Welcome to our nightmares.
Even though the storm was abating, and the conditions meant that they could see more than a few yards in front of them and weren't scoured by sprays of dirt and dust, it was still a long, hard slog toward the Ville.
Don't these storms ever stop?